Welcome to a London Town Posse Roundtable. We are speaking to a group of 9/11 truth activists. Is that a fair title? Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here in the City of London, where there's all the money and the dragons and the rosy cross everywhere. So welcome to you all. So far as I know, none of you are authors with books to plug or commercial filmmakers or lecturers on lucrative speaking tours. More or less ordinary Brits brought together by the quest for what we call 9/11 truth. We'll come on to why that is later, but first of all, could you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Oh, well, my name's Noel Glynn. I got interested in this when I read an article in The Independent by Michael Meacher, MP, who had fairly...
I think it was in The Guardian.
In September 2003, when he argued that the 9/11 attacks could not have happened unless there had been a stand down of the US Air Force.
Right.
And I thought, I don't know about that. But what really got me curious was the way that the White House reacted to this. Instead of saying, no, Mr. Meacher's got it entirely wrong because of A, B, and C, they immediately started in a character assassination of him, essentially flinging mud at him and saying he's not the sort of person that anyone would ever trust and so on. Not the sort of person that anyone would trust, who was a recent minister in their most closely allied government. Strange, I thought.
But had you been doing any kind of campaigning before? Were you a political activist, or did this particular story stand out to you?
Oh, I've been involved in political campaigns before, but this struck me as something I ought to begin to investigate, and did.
Okay. I'm Stefan Sepouris. I haven't actually been around on 9/11 Truth for all that long. I think it was summer last year that my attention was first tweaked. I'm very into politics, not necessarily activism. I'm quite a cynical person and quite cynical about what activism can achieve. So I hadn't really joined Stop the War or Socialist Worker Party or any groups like that. But I did read two newspapers a day. I was very into politics. We used to debate on a political forum. And just a little tidbit of this information came on this forum, and everyone's response to it seemed to be in step. You know, everyone said exactly the same thing. It wasn't a compelling answer either. I didn't instantly think, right, 9/11 is an inside job. I just thought there's a bit more to this. I was actually coincidentally house sitting with my parents at the time, and it was just me and two cats and two chickens actually, and a vegetable patch to tend. Like, we didn't have anything to do, so I just started looking into this on the internet, and I was looking at the banking sites, I was looking at the conspiracy sites, I just read and read and read, and by the end of it, I just, there's no opinion anyone who's read thoroughly on this can have, other than that the official story is a load of nonsense.
Okay, thanks. Ian?
My name's Ian Neal. I have long known, if you like, you can call it a conspiracy. I've long known that the rich and powerful in this world run things in secret for their own benefit and not for the benefit of humanity. So I've long been open to the idea that we're not told the full truth about events. I've read around the subject quite a bit, in, just generally in terms of conspiracy theories. When 9/11 happened, then I was automatically had my suspicions, therefore. But I just put it alongside many other conspiracy theories in effect, and that, that's interesting, but it won't actually change the world to campaign about it. I mean, I've been involved in social justice, international development campaign for 20 years. But as the evidence started getting compiled and put into books, put into videos, then you could just see how compelling it was and how accessible it was. And as the 9/11 truth movement in the US started growing, then, well, I contacted a few of the US sites and said, well, you know, is the UK equivalent of this? And from contacts in the States, then I got a few names, and on the back of that started sending out emails about trying to set up a network within this country around 9/11 truth. And it's kind of snowballed from there. That's 3 years ago now.
Wow.
And I am right now, it's 3 years ago. So, yeah, that's my background, and I'll tell you some more if you want.
Okay.
Right, my name's Andy Baker. I can't remember the exact timeline of events, whether I watched Fahrenheit 9/11 first or read the Michael Meach article.
But more importantly, before we get to the specific bit, who are you?
Oh, I'm just a regular. I grew up in South Africa, moved over here when I was 16. My parents are quite involved in the anti-apartheid movement while we were out there. Any sort of campaign I've done, I mean, I did go on a lot of the Stop the War marches prior to the Iraq War. I mean, what, too many people in the streets and nothing happened, so I got a bit disillusioned with it all. And then sort of, I'm not sure what came first, Fahrenheit 9/11 or Michael Meach article Mel mentioned. And I decided to look a bit more into it, and then sort of went on the website, saw all this pods, and thought, no, conspiracy nonsense. And it wasn't until sort of early last year, I was doing a temp job and had a bit of extra time to spend on the internet.
Surfing as a temp.
And,
fantastic.
Found out about Building 7 and sort of went and had a look at that, and then sort of that sort of swung me, and couldn't find any British 9/11 websites through searching until I found actually Ian's name listed on 9/11truth.org and contacted him and said, how can I get involved, and sort of snowballed from there. But there have been periods, I think especially when I first got into it, I thought I was going a bit crazy. But in my last job, I actually worked with a special advisor to one of the House of Lords, and I started talking to her about it. And it was when she started referring to the men in grey suits, and it's not the people who run, the people you think who run this place aren't the people who run this place, from someone who actually works in the Houses of Parliament, is when I think I've
Your ears pricked up.
I committed myself 100% to this. Really.
Your ears pricked up. And Belinda?
Yeah, I'm Belinda. I'm one of the older members of this new campaign, if you like. I, at the age of 60, have been asleep most of my life, I have to admit, but I sort of woke up in 1998 when I was involved with a charity that came under fire from the Charity Commission, and it seemed to me that there were definitely political undertones to this whole attack on this charity, which happened to be a Middle Eastern-based charity. And so, with a group of other people who'd had problems with the Charity Commission, we formed a group that challenged the Charity Commission, and also then began to campaign for a more accountable system of charity regulation. And there's been a new Charities Act, and all that is now history. But during the course of all this investigation into the darker side, of, if you like, of the Charity Commission as the regulatory body for charities, I obviously started to look at other issues, and I remember being with somebody on 9/11 itself, watching all this incredible stuff happening in front of our eyes on TV, and I thought the official story, which seemed to be coming out already at that time, which was that the planes had brought down these two buildings, couldn't possibly be right, because it somehow didn't seem right that all that smoke was coming out and all that pulverized dust, and seemed to me that the whole thing happened too quickly.
So you were suspicious straight away?
I was suspicious from the start, yes. I thought, why are they blowing up their own, you know, major landmark buildings in the centre of New York? That's my reaction. And then I thought, well, obviously other people are going to think like me, so there's going to be a hell of a stink about this. And then, although there was a book in France and various things happened,
the tiramisu.
Yeah, nothing very much seemed to be happening at all. And then there was this sort of official commission of inquiry, and it seemed to leave a lot of questions unanswered from what I could sort of superficially gauge. And so I was sort of waiting all the time, 2002, and then these horrible wars started, and I thought, this is really, you know, this is too much that Muslims are being attacked for this, when there's obviously some other aspects of this. And then it was a friend, Andrew Johnson, who's quite scientifically sort of orientated fellow, who's a friend of mine, who suggested that I get into the 9/11 truth campaign. Because I said to him, you know, I'm not really happy with the official story at all. He said, well, come on, let's get campaigning. And then there was this conference in May 2005 in London, and a lot of people came over from the United States and key activists in the movement over there. And I just realised, this has to be the campaign of all time, because this is the biggest atrocity in front of our eyes in recent memory, and it's done in order to completely blow our minds, you know, shock and awe. So if it's blown our minds in the wrong way, then we need to get active to actually investigate what really happened on that day. This has sort of gone on from there.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty then. You have a mainstream media in the UK, US and the UK, and most parts of the world, with the official story. 19 hijackers, 4 planes, let's roll in Shanksville, Virginia. And the buildings come down because of the steel girders. What's your issue, and anyone can take this, with the official story? What about
it's
it do
not,
you not would you not
question.
Find credible?
You know, I find almost none of it credible, and it's incredible to me that I found it credible for so long. I think that
what was the process of
the very,
you know,
first
going from one
I,
to the other
I
position
saw
to the other
was the squibs, which a lot of people might say wasn't the strongest piece of evidence. I just didn't think the answer that everyone supplied for it was so compelling. Do you know what I mean? It's if you look at these towers, are 64 meters long. I read it from the internet when it was first presented to me, and I said these towers are 64 meters long. That makes this squib 15, 20 meters long. It's about 2 floors high. There's bits of, you know, just scaling it. Do you know what I mean? Look at each ridge of that building as a window. You know, there are bits of debris that's supposed to be bits of glass from a window. Each of them are bigger than a window. You know what I mean? It was not like a puff of dust out of a window.
Well, do you have a scientific background or?
I don't. This was all very much just not accepting it. But that, like I said, at that point, I didn't think 9/11 is an inside job. I just thought that answer is not all-encompassing. Everyone seems to be accepting it as like, oh, it's puffs of dust. It's compressed air. It didn't fit for me. And then, obviously, from reading that, the second you Google this...
Sorry.
That's okay. The second you Google this, you find out other things. So one by one, I was finding out these bits of information and the speed of the collapses, the core columns, and so on. And I was looking to the debunking sites for some kind of easy answer for them, and I wasn't finding suitable answers. And I got it. I'm quite a cynical person, gentlemen. I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist, though we're all called conspiracy theorists. I actually tried to debunk all of this for myself.
I should say, for anyone listening, you are wearing a tinfoil hat.
I am wearing a tinfoil suit. I rode her on a tinfoil bike. No, I mean, I tried to find the answers out there. I mean, I did look to the official explanations, and I found them wanting in every way. And you say which part or which part isn't. I mean, you get on the list, and there's almost no part of that story that you can actually find a decent answer for in the official version.
Any other Damascene conversions?
No. I mean, I just say, if you look at David Ray Griffin's 9/11 Commission submissions and distortions, he calls the report a 571-page lie. I mean, just... the official story just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. If you look at all the omissions that were in there, the NORAD timelines that have changed three or four times now, the put options, which I think hasn't actually been investigated well, and I think some people who call themselves researchers, rather than looking at some of these more sort of wacky
esoteric
theories, should look at the put options. If you've got the time, should go and look into these put options, because I mean, these phenomenal amounts of money stuck on these put options, and the SEC looked at it.
Person.
Yeah, the SEC looked at it and just said, "Oh, these."
You can take our word for it. It's not connected to Al Qaeda, therefore case closed.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
reverse. Yeah,
the basic gist of it was trust us.
Yeah,
well, so they start. The 9/11 Commission report starts with its conclusion. It starts with saying these people did it. These Islamic terrorists did it, and they dismiss the entire put options thing by saying we can't find a connection to Al Qaeda there. You see what I mean? It's reverse reasoning. And they start off with the guilty person, and then they dismiss all evidence. They can't connect to that person. You know, the funny thing is, you say what turned me on to 9/11 was the official story. It wasn't a conspiracy theories. It's fact the official story had no answer whatsoever for these points that had been brought up.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. The point I would make about it is, I mean, when I kicked off or got involved in this network, then. I was under the impression that David Ray Griffin's book was out by that time. And I was under the impression that as soon as the anti-war movement, the Green movement, the peace movement got wind of this and started looking into it, then it would be as obvious as it is to me.
Yeah, well, you see, that was what I was looking for
all
this time.
And I've been really surprised by the resistance to it, and I'm really at a loss to try and explain it, because what
tricks me off around, you know, why do I suspect 9/11? Well, what's not to suspect? I mean, George Bush is the president. Do we forget what his father did? Do we forget about Iran-Contra? Do we forget what Iran-Contra was? You know, trading drugs in exchange for hostages in order to overthrow a legitimate government. I mean, people have got such... Well, I say people. The collective mind seems to have, you know, a memory lapse in terms of joining up the dots around, look, there's been instances in history where democracy has been shown to be a sham, where the highest authorities in the United States have been found to be complicit in overthrowing governments, in drug running, and basically a criminal mafia. And when you've got those type of people, then what's not to suspect about 9/11? You know, why wouldn't you be suspicious about that? And I guess it's just too much of a jump for a lot of people to make, but it's growing.
Well, we'll come on to your experiences about campaigning later. Andy, you wanted to chip in?
I would say, I've met Stefan on a few sort of other internet forums, and we get told that we approach this dogmatic effect that 9/11 is our job, and it's like that isn't actually the message we're trying to get when we're debating these in outside the sort of 9/11 circles as such. We're trying to say, look at the evidence, all we've campaigned for is an independent investigation. However, all these people come back to us, and it's amazing how dogmatic they are with, no, the commission's, they've said this, but it's like, well, have you actually researched? It's no, but it's right. It's astounding how dogmatic people are with their belief.
How willing people are to believe a short story in general.
But a lot of the comebacks to us is that we are working under a belief system that 9/11 is inside job.
We're the ones that are deluded.
It just smacks of hypocrisy, really.
Absolutely. I was going to follow up on what you were saying about people that are most sort of dogmatically opposed to us actually will refuse to look into it themselves. And there was a protest that me and Belinda and Andy went to leaflet, and I perhaps stupidly got into a long conversation with someone that wasn't going to be convinced. And I was trying to talk to them about, you know, they're very aggressive, and I was trying to talk about why I believe this, and they said, you know, sort of the planes hit the buildings fell down. That's what I need to know. And I was like, well, have you looked at
it? It's very simple.
Yeah. And I said, have you actually looked at the NIST report and looked at why they explain the building fell down? Obviously, under the fact they didn't. Do you know what I mean? But he said, why would I want to look at a conspiracy theory report? And I was like, do you know what NIST are? And he was like, I don't want to know about conspiracy theories. Yeah. And I was like, NIST is national. You know, it's
the drawbridges go down the whole
there is,
thing.
Well, yeah. It's a bridge too far. Yeah. It's a bridge too far, some people.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that. Conversations with people on the left, and particularly members of the SWP, have astonished me. Oh, there was no conspiracy. We know. I've looked into it. I know all about it. You know, I don't want to talk to you. Thank you. No, I know. Is your reaction. I said to them, are you really saying that the upper echelons of the capitalist class are to be trusted, and that we should not question whether they would devise these kinds of events in order to further their own interests? No, there was no conspiracy. Absolutely.
It's an article of faith. I mean, a lot of times I've heard people say, well, why would they kill their own people? And I mean, how do you respond to that?
It's probably the most racist view. I'm sorry, it is. But when you know that this sort of thing, false flag attacks have been happening in Latin America, have been happening in the Middle East forever, it's all on record. But then say that they would never kill their own people. It's to actually suggest that their people are worth more than people in other countries. I mean, people are perfectly happy to accept that things like this happen in other countries. Of course it happens in the third world. You know what I mean? Governments do terrible things there. They wouldn't do it to us, though, would they? Why? Because you're American? Because you're British? Did you really think that these people have this same view as you, that your life's inherently worth more than some in another country? It sounds bombastic, but I do think it's rooted in a basic... racist belief.
Yeah. It might just be a misunderstanding of you know, who the powers that be mean when they say we.
Yeah, I think
should it be?
We means a much smaller group than a lot of people
than they possibly imagine. Yeah.
Another point is, I mean, a lot of the times you go, well, it can never be a conspiracy because there's thousands and thousands of people involved and they all keep it quiet, but I don't see why there had to be thousands and thousands of people involved to set a few explosives in a tower, to organise a few war games, and to arrange a standout. It would have needed
The war games is totally key, because you have situations that are quite chillingly similar to the actual attack happening. And you get a lot of people working these war games. Now, they might suspect, in fact, they're working on something else, but what are they going to say? And they can go public with this and face a court-martial saying, I think this war game I was a part of might have actually been something to do with 9/11.
Briefly, if you can you tell us a bit more about the war games?
There's very little to tell. I mean, the information's pretty fractured, and we've tried to look into it. There's very little released. I think they know, is it 15?
Can come back to 20, I think, now.
Well, yeah, I mean, more come up all the time, more names. Maybe they're the same operation under different names. Very early on, they were saying there's at least 4, so we can say that as a baseline figure and ignore the fact that now they're saying 15, 20, perhaps. But these involved hijackings.
This is the Thomas Crown affair thing, where you have so many men in bowler hats going that you can't find the real Thomas. So you have so many planes.
I mean, when you have these war games going on, people could be involved in this conspiracy that would not know they're involved in the conspiracy. I mean, it's just a theory. Okay, let's forget that, because that is just a theory. There's plenty of facts we can talk about.
Sure.
So,
You had all sorts of things going on. You've got, I think it's the head of the FAA. It was his first day on the job. And this all sort of happened. Just lots of certain things happened to create sort of confusion. They had sort of war games going on. All their fighter pilots are sent up to the north quadrant of America to have some war game about Russian pilots flying in to attack America, some nuclear attack on America, even though the Cold War ended God knows how many years ago. Then you had when the initial flights went up, the one excuse was, we saw these flights are being scrambled, and there were some hijackings, but we only ever envisaged these hijackings coming from abroad, so we sent all our planes out to the Atlantic.
Sure.
And
it's very interesting you say that, because Channel 4 did a documentary about 9/11 conspiracies, essentially dismissing almost all of them. And one of the things they said was, they had a member of the 9/11 Commission, and they said, well, we looked into all of these theories about, you know, the Air Force being decommissioned or stood down, and really the difficulty was that we kind of didn't do those exercises anymore because of the peace with the former Soviet Union, or the non-existence of the Soviet Union, which is completely contradictory to what we're hearing now about the amount of war games that there.
Even though there was going on this week in Virginia. You know,
of course, every country.
That's one of the areas I would like to pick up on in terms of challenging the official version, is that Condoleezza Rice came out and said, well, nobody could have predicted this, that envisaged that somebody would hijack planes and crash them into domestic targets. Excuse me, what was Project Bojinka? They were on record of getting multiple warnings from various governments around the world. So that straight off is a lie. You know, they did have prior warning, and they did have reason to suspect that this scenario would happen. They were tracking it. People were alerting them to that possibility within their own intelligence services. So for Condoleezza Rice and for Bush to come out and say, we were caught by surprise, you know, but we won't be caught again, nonsense. And yet people's lack of curiosity around that, I mean, that's... The thing I want to stress is that the evidence is out there on the internet, in DVD form, in book form, and so forth. So if this broadcast triggers people's suspicions enough, then please go and check it out for yourself.
We'll wrap up with that. Yeah, we'll come into specific recommendations.
Yeah,
Andy.
I mean, just sort of going on what Ian said about the pre-warning stuff, I think it was only last week, Le Monde has been translated into English now. I think you've got 9/11 blogger.com.
Le Monde Diplomatique?
That's the international one. It was actually the French official Le Monde came out. Their secret services, there's a leak from their secret services about warnings that they gave to America 2 months prior to 9/11, which included hijacking planes and flying into buildings.
They were very specific warnings. Yeah.
Very, very specific warnings. You've got Putin on, who phoned up Bush and gave him a personal warning.
I don't know if he actually phoned Bush, but he said in an interview, it was quite sort of informal the way he said it, but I said I told him what would happen and when it would happen, and they ignored me.
And I mean, you put this, I think, allegedly, Israel gave at least sort of 4 or 5 hijackers' names to the actual names of these hijackers. I mean, we won't know until we get the full investigation, but
Okay.
Warnings were coming from everywhere, basically. You can sum it up by that. If you go and look at the 9/11 timeline, it has a section of warnings, and it's pages long. I mean, there were so many warnings. Some of them not so explicit, some of them vague. The picture they must have gathered by this, wish I could remember who said it, but there was a senior military figure who said the amount of pre-warning there was makes claims of incompetence untenable. I mean, that many warnings, you can't say they didn't think at least perhaps to stop people bringing knives onto planes. Think about it, even the tiniest little increase in airport security.
Tell pilots lock the door.
9/11 could not have happened. The tiniest increase.
Well, I mean, going back to the put options as well now, I mean, the securities institutes and the CIA and all those kind of people have very high developed software to, if there's a major increase in buying or selling of a certain stock, that gets flagged up.
Or maybe they don't, because the FBI clearly can't email the CIA.
SEC, but that these will get flagged up to an official government agency if there's an extraordinary surge on any particular stock. And this was done the week before 9/11. We're talking about sort of a 9,000% increase in stocks.
Documentary called Yacht Upgrade Money.
There's analysts saying they've never seen this increase in any kind of put options before.
One thing I thought was very interesting, just to interject for a moment, was that the volumes of the amount of money involved in put options, as far as I know, which Channel 4 described in their documentary as yacht upgrade money, is very interesting. There was a documentary on a completely different subject called The Corporation, which I don't know whether you've seen, in which a stockbroker says, well, our clients were all alright because they were in gold. Actually, the volume of money connected to 9/11 might have been far, far, far more than actually buying put options on the stocks of the airlines is kind of amateurish. If you really wanted to make money, you could do it in other commodities.
This is the thing again, they weren't actually claimed, a lot of them weren't claimed. It makes it one of the a bigger mystery than a lot of people make out. There is a documentary out there that discusses it. I don't agree with them, but they... what's the name of the doc? I'm sorry to your listeners, I cannot remember the name. But basically what I'll say is these put options, a lot of them weren't actually claimed. It's simply bizarre. I won't theorise now, but it's very odd, this put options thing, because they could have made millions, no one claimed
them. Well, the simple solution to this mystery and many other mysteries is the evidence is there. Why not release it? If there's no smoking gun, the SEC have got nothing to hide.
Nothing to hide, nothing to fear.
Yeah, then why not tell us who actually bought the options?
Very good point.
Just a quick point. I mean, you're saying about the other things, the put options on these particular companies. If you look at other companies, the reinsurance companies, military companies like Raytheon, there are a lot of put options and shares bought on these companies, which is not put options, sorry, but shares bought on companies, reinsurance and Raytheon and other companies like that, military spending companies.
There's a lot. There is a lot of stuff out there. Obviously.
There's a lot of stuff.
I want to nail your colours to the mast on this one. I would talk about what I would call the Webster Tarpley scale, from the official conspiracy theory, as you might want to term it, which your man in the street in the city would believe it exactly the way it was, you know, buildings falling down, 1300, no mystery involved, you know, kerosene melts steel or bend steel, all the rest of it. You've got official conspiracy theory with unanswered questions. Then you've got LIHOP, which is let it happen on purpose, which means the US military establishment understands what's going on, knows it's going to happen, but because it's suicide purpose, don't intervene. And then you got on the further end, the MIHOP, which is make it happen on purpose. Where are each of you with this, and why?
I don't think we'd be here if we were solely subscribing to LIHOP. You know, we obviously have looked into this whole thing. We might have started with LIHOP, but we've come round to full MIHOP because there's so much evidence for complicity in these attacks, and you cannot say that just turning a blind eye to incoming warnings or, you know, intelligence alerts which probably didn't reach the right people or whatever is enough to explain what actually happened because of the scientific anomalies of the day. It has to be a rigged event.
I mean, I would go as far as to say that it's the conspiracy we face is my hop and a lot further. It's very all-encompassing. But that's not really the point. If the evidence points to us having suspicions that LIHOP is the case, i.e. the US government knew it happened but allowed it to happen, to my mind, that is the same as MIHOP. Try and explain the difference to me. In terms of, you've got a democratic elected government and it turns a blind eye to terrorists, it colludes with them. That is the same as doing it yourself. Well, I personally believe that they did do it themselves.
Speaking theoretically, one could say, well, LIHOP means there really are bad guys out to get the United States. MIHOP means there really aren't. So that's a kind of...
I don't think it doesn't mean there are. I think you can assume there are people out there to get the United States. It's what their capabilities are. Mm. I think with MIHOP, LIHOP's included. I mean, you can't... What Andy was saying about a conspiracy of thousands of people. I mean, there's no reason that people like Sybil Edmonds, who pointed out sort of...
this is the LIHOP, FBI translator.
Yeah, who pointed out sort of LIHOP-style happenings. That could be part of MIHOP. I mean, it doesn't mean that if you have people making it happen, that you have a lot of people who control there, and some of it could be controlled through people at the tops of organisations setting something in structure whereby something isn't dealt with. No. You know, you can go... Sorry, no.
No, no.
Well, I was LIHOP at first, and gradually...
This is let it happen on purpose.
Let it happen on purpose, yes. I found that a more palatable and easily digestible explanation of what appeared to me to have gone on. But gradually, after looking at the evidence, I came to the conclusion that they made it happen on purpose. But having said that, I think it's extremely important that those of us who make that shift from LIHOP to MIHOP bear in mind that other people who are beginning to look at it may very well be coming to a LIHOP position, and those people need to be included in the campaign and not absolutely ridiculed and not put down and regarded as our comrades. And I would go further than that and say, even people who say, oh, it's awful, it's a lot of nonsense. Of course, the Americans didn't, were not complicit in this at all.
They wouldn't do that to their own people.
Even people who say that are potentially persuadable that there is so much doubt about this issue that there ought to be a thorough investigation. And I believe that we... Yeah, and that I believe we can make common purpose with those people.
Yeah. I mean, the day it happened, I was out in Australia at the time. I remember watching it sort of live on TV. I was actually, at the time, I was reading a book by Chalmers Johnson called Blowback, which is a CIA term for, if we do this now in a certain country, what's going to be the blowback in 20 years' time? So that sort of fitted right into what I was reading at the time, going, oh, it's definitely, the Americans have pissed enough people off, they're bound to happen sometime.
Mm.
And then obviously you started reading the Mike Amici thing about sort of war games, like, okay, we move to the LIHOP position. But then I say, you start look at World Trade Center 7, and there's absolutely no way. I mean, you've got Jawenko, controlled demolition expert, saying this was brought down with controlled demolition.
I mean, I think most people in Britain would not know what you meant by WTC7.
Well, World Trade Center 7, the Solomon Brothers building, as it's otherwise known. I think the BBC reported it falling
on it collapsing before it actually
half down before it did. With the actually behind the reporter,
which makes you wonder why they can't get the weather right.
Yeah, but yeah, that's just. Saw into World Trade Center 7. Even then, I was a bit sort of sketchy about it because I'm not an architect, I'm not an engineer or a physicist. So it wasn't my main angle of campaigning. But over the past year, I've got more and more into the collapse of the two towers and World Trade Center 7.
But I would say the popular mechanics can explain what happened at WTC 7, which brings me neatly on to the next area, which is debunking. I'm just mentioning this. There was a BBC. The BBC did an investigation and presented its conclusions in its Conspiracy Files documentary.
Yeah.
And it basically. I'm sure you're all glued to the screen.
I've still got complaints out with
as I was. And it basically concluded there was a bit of confusion on the day, fog of war, some bureaucratic ass covering, but basically nothing to see here. Case closed. What are your thoughts on that specifically, and on the mainstream media coverage?
Well, I just wanted to respond on the debunking side, because I said to you earlier on, in my early days of finding out about this and reading about this, I was reading as much debunking sites as I was reading. Viewers can't see me doing that little thing with my two fingers. conspiracy theory sites. So I was reading them in equal measure. I was going from one to the other. I was comparing arguments. I was seeing which stood up. So I really do think I know the debunking sites probably better than most debunkers do. I've looked at them. I don't think they have seen an explanation for 90%. And that's been very generous, 90%, because there is a lot of rubbish written.
But what about an august institution like the BBC?
Well, the BBC seems to... Sorry, Emma, just... No, they seem to rely very much on Popular Mechanics, which is one of these articles I read. Their main source seemed to be Davin Coburn, who was a Popular Mechanics journalist, formerly sports journalist. His biggest article before taking the lead, second lead, after Chertoff's cousin... was writing an article about a mascot for a sports magazine. These guys aren't mechanics. They're not, you know, they're writing for Popular Mechanics. They don't have any science degrees. Slaven Coburn doesn't have a degree at all. But he turns up in the BBC Files programme and says, if you understood how World Trade Center 7 was built, you wouldn't think it was a controlled demolition.
I
was watching this. Sorry, I'll rant on a little bit further.
I'll
wrap up quick as I can. But they didn't follow on. I was expecting, okay, let's hear what they got to say. Didn't follow on. That was it. It was just him saying,
take my word for it.
I have to say, I can try and be as usual as possible, but I have to say, I found that particular part of that documentary absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, he goes, done.
Well, yes, it looks exactly like a controlled demolition,
but if you knew
what I know, essentially,
yeah.
As an authority,
even though it
quacks like a demolition and walks like a demolition, it's not a demolition.
It's not
trust me, I'm an expert.
Yeah, it's a goat. Ignore the beak, ignore the feathers, it's a goat.
Which is a sports journalist to that degree.
Yeah. But then Danny Yuenko, you turn to this guy, this ex-sports journalist, saying, if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't think it's a controlled demolition. You go across to Holland, Danny Yuenko, saying, I am a controlled demolition expert. It's not an island trooper.
Owns his own company.
Owns his own company. He doesn't only say it was a controlled demolition. He says it couldn't have not been a controlled demolition. And from looking at the structural diagrams, he can show...
This is Building 7.
Yeah, this is Building 7, Danny Yuenko. He can show exactly how it was done by looking at he does it on camera there. He says, yeah, you take out these two, and then you take out the rest at the same time. The guy says to him in the interview, could it perhaps have been done by damage here and damage here and fires throughout? Doesn't let him finish a sentence. He says, no, it couldn't. This could only be a controlled demolition. So that's an expert, not just saying he thinks it is a controlled demolition. He's saying it can't be anything else. And you don't need an engineering degree to understand. You can only get a symmetrical collapse by all of the columns going. Because I don't have any kind of scientific bone in my body, but I think a guy called Callum Douglas in our movement explained this perfectly in a lecture I saw of his. Simplest explanation, he stood in a chair. Okay, if you take out two legs at the back, what happens? He falls backwards. You take out three of the legs, you topple that way. I mean, the only way you can go straight down is with all four legs going. Anyone can understand that. My brother, who I've been working on for a long time, 9/11 Truth, finally got him around my house, put Building 7 on the internet, silence. Okay, there's something there.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the problems I had with the BBC documentary is, again, this sort of collective amnesia, because you were saying, well, how could an organisation like the BBC, with all its resources, be so misguided, you know, from our point of view, in their analysis of... Because basically they were saying that this type of conspiracy could not be true. And yet there's some excellent BBC documentaries that will argue the exact opposite. And I'll point...
Horizon Show, what we got.
I wasn't thinking of the Horizon Show. I was thinking that they did a Storyville documentary called Why We Fight. Fantastic documentary in terms of false flag terror and covert operations.
And damn near impossible to get on DVD.
The Wonders of YouTube is fantastic.
Yeah.
The other one, the investigation they did into the USS Liberty, Down in the Water, fantastic documentary.
The Anthrax one, which has been completely forgotten.
Anthrax, Power of Nightmares, etc., etc. So you've got these documentaries which the BBC have produced, which are, in my mind, are an excellent presentation of other events. And yet when it comes to 9/11, well, the whole idea that the US government, despite its very checkered history and the fact it's been found to be lying about the war in Iraq and found to be lying about this and that, we're supposed to take them at their word? A complete hatchet job, basically.
Of not doing it on the street and frightening the horses. You know, in other words, let's keep the public very calm, because this issue is quite inflammatory, as I think we probably all agree. You know, and if the truth did start to really come out big time,
oh, the consequences are huge.
Very
of course,
much disturb huge tracts of the general public, and people who've been direct victims and suffered from.
For sure.
Another documentary, it's not BBC one, but to direct people towards, is one called Unconstitutional. I don't know who's made it. It should be on Google Video, or if not, find it on some bits.
That sounds like Robert Greenwald.
Yeah, it's called Unconstitutional. It's basically about the erosion of civil liberties in America since 9/11. It focuses a lot on the anthrax attacks after 9/11, because a lot of these issues do tie back to 9/11. But I think the biggest one was the writing of the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
This was brought in 2 weeks after 9/11. If you look at the how voluminous it is and the length of this act, how they've got lawyers to write this in 2 weeks is
virtually impossible.
It is impossible,
basically. I didn't want to speculate too much, really. But it is impossible. And this was brought out 2 or 3 weeks after 9/11. I think it was given to the Congress to read at something like...
while it was still warm.
5 in the morning, while it was still warm. It had to be voted on at 10 in the morning. So it had like 5 hours to read a 600-page document.
Whilst we're talking about debunking, are there any theories out there which you would want to distance yourself from?
Millions of them. Half an hour. There is so much rubbish written about 9/11.
Pretty much half the conspiracy files program.
Yes. I could be paranoid and say it's disinformation, or I could say it was very gullible people who want to believe a Hollywood image of the world. There is simply a lot of rubbish written out there, and it's not necessary. I'm not going to list these theories. It's giving them credit. Everyone who's listening to your podcast knows one,
which was flagged up in the BBC documentary, and that was the conspiracy theory that this is somehow a Jewish conspiracy or a Zionist conspiracy. Now, that's not to say that I deny that Zionism and Israel plays a very important role in global events, and that I'm unaware of its connections to the US government. But that is completely misleading. If anyone thinks that the world is run by a particular religious faith, they are completely misguided, straight racist.
Agreed.
And that is the one theory that I would flag up high and wide to say I have got nothing to do with it.
It's the most offensive one, without a doubt. And there are a lot of ludicrous ones.
Now, the other thing I'll go down that route on is I'll tell you that those that take that particular angle, some are gullible, some are misguided, but genuinely believe that. But many of those that voice that particular opinion, I will argue, are actually working for the dark forces, the hidden government that...
This is the Queen's dark forces.
I'm
not accusing the Queen of being a dark force.
Sure, and all I'm saying is powerful people making decisions in private.
Hmm.
But those that
I think when you say it like that,
it sounds so rational.
But it is rational.
It's
all rational.
I mean, it is naive to think that a movement like 9/11 Truth Movement or campaigns around the world haven't been infiltrated. It's just naive
Does that make you uncomfortable?
No, not really. I think the second you decide to come along to a meeting, the second you decide even to post in the forum, if you actually think about things, you realise what you're getting into. You put your head down. I mean, if David Ray Griffin is walking around and Stephen James is walking around, and you know, their pilots 9/11 truth are still flying. I mean, it's like to think that me, Stefan Tsipras, unemployed person in London. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and even if they're going to, what does it matter? I mean, it's about what's right. It's like, if you're going to actually commit yourself to something like this, you have to just forget about that. Assume the worst, get your head down, and get on with things.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the reason I'm probably in it is I haven't got any children at the moment, but I want to have children someday, and if we continue following down the track that humanity is following down at the minute, and we let them get away with this, we haven't got any future. Which
absolutely.
My future children, if I'm ever lucky to have any, it's no good for them.
Right.
That I'm doing this for.
This is about the civil liberties and the violations and the wars and stuff, which followed on from 9/11.
That's exactly it, Michael. I mean, basically, for me, I've said this before, and it curls lips, and perhaps I'm a bit of a heartless person, but if 9/11 was just about 3,000 people dying, I would certainly express my opinion on it. I wouldn't be putting a lot of my effort and energy and time into campaigning about it. It's about what 9/11 was a motive. Do you know what I mean? It was the cause, and the catalyst is a perfect way of saying it. And the symptoms are simply horrible. Do you know what I mean? And the ramifications are horrible. And it's about the future. It's not just about us right now in this room. It's about, as Andy so rightly says, about our children and our grandchildren after that. It's huge. And that's why I'm here. If it was just 3,000 people killed, that's a tragedy. It's not necessarily worthy of my time. So that sounds so heartless to say it. I'm a heartless person.
I don't get out of bed for anything more than 10,000 people killed.
I'm looking at 9/11 as a point of history rather than a crime. You know, I'm looking at a point of history, and it's a turning point.
It's not just a murder mystery for you.
Exactly.
Andy, I was going to read you a couple of quotes, a couple of choice quotes, which from. I don't know whether any of you would describe yourselves as progressives or lefties or anything, but I've got two choice quotes from people I personally have admired in the past, maybe a little bit less now. One is from Noam Chomsky. One of the major consequences of the 9/11 movement has been to draw enormous amounts of energy and effort away from activism directed to real and ongoing crimes of state. Crimes that are far more serious than blowing up the World Trade Center would be, if there were any credibility to that thesis. That is, I suspect, why the 9/11 movement is treated far more tolerantly by centers of power than is the norm for serious critical and activist work. And I'll just hold you to read one more from a guy I really like, who wrote a great book called Captive State, and it says, why do I bother with these morons? Because they are destroying the movement some of us have spent a long time trying to build. These, we are now discovering, are peculiarly susceptible to this epidemic of gibberish. And he goes on to say, it seems to me that the purpose of the 9/11 truth movement, he puts in quotes, like Stefan did, with his fingers in the air, is to be powerless. The omnipotence of the Bush regime is the coward's fantasy, an excuse for inaction used by those who don't have the stomach to engage in real political fights.
Okay.
What say you?
These are standard arguments that, in fact, going back to the Social Worker Party, seems to be drummed into the Social Worker Party's minds. Every time I meet someone, a left-wing activist, who has these views, they'll say to me, you're doing 9/11, why don't you do something you can change? Why don't you stop the war? And first of all, I'd say this is a very unique charge aimed at this movement. Okay, you don't get someone campaigning against the war in Iraq, someone coming up to them saying, why don't you care about climate change? Why don't you care about Darfur? Of course you don't. You don't assume if someone's interested in one thing, they don't care about anything else. With the 9/11 Truth movement, you get this blanket assumption. If someone's into 9/11 Truth, they don't care about anything else. Secondly, okay, tell me how I stop this war. I'll do it, come back after lunch, and focus on the 9/11 Truth again. There's a conflated opinion of these people that they're doing a lot more than they actually are. They'll say, we're doing so much for our Stop the War movement, or this movement, or that movement. Why don't we do something that makes a difference? It's like, great, give me the option. I'll go stop the war, and I'll come back, and I'll do something 9/11 Truth. It's absolute nonsense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm very much with what Stefan's saying there in terms of challenging what Noam Chomsky and is it Naomi will forgive me and was it George Monbiot?
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, well, we'll take up George Monbiot. I mean, his angle was, how dare they come and subvert activism away from the cause that I've built up. Excuse me, but many of the people that are involved in 9/11 Truth are part of the peace movement, are part of the social justice movement, campaigning for economic justice, social justice, and end to racism around the world. The reason we latch onto 9/11 is because it exposes
one, the lies and deceit of the American administration, but all the other axis of the willing, if you like, Britain, Australia, and the Western powers. It also implicates mainstream media and the lies we're told around that. The powers that be will be only too happy if we're campaigning along, say, well, war is bad, la, la, la. The same sort of types of messages which have been heard for many, many mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. As long as the assumption is that the people like Tony Blair are just slightly misunderstood and that we have a honest difference of opinion. No, the guy's a war-mongering mass murderer who has lied to us about 9/11 and has lied to us about 7/7. Or at least is high lighter about that. We're meant to trust George Bush, who just stolen two elections, etc. And where is the progressive movement about actually having a radical voice? I'm sorry, going on. I fully supported Make Poverty History. That's my background in terms of work and so forth. But unless you speak truth to power in terms of saying actually, you guys, all your kind words from the G8 summit and la 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 means nothing to me because you're mass murderers. And the way to expose that and to bring that to people's attention, well, of course you can talk about DRC, you can talk about Rwanda, you can talk about East Timor. Most people don't care. You talk about, hey, they blew up 3,000 people in the United States and they lied to you about it. It triggers things within Middle England and Middle America that no amount of talk about problems in the third world or poor countries will ever do. And it brings it right to heart. And that's why they're so worried about us. I mean, ultimately, this should lead to a global people power movement standing up to the fascists.
But Noam Chomsky says that you're being well-treated by the mainstream media.
Have we really? And the man is seriously misguided.
Noam Chomsky said the man of movement is treated far more tolerantly by censor power than as an officer.
Yeah, and
critical.
What did he say before that? We can leave. We have to understand that
9/11 actually started this thing called the War on Terror, which hasn't been mentioned up to now.
Which is what I care. Yeah.
And within a few weeks of 9/11, there was the invasion of Afghanistan, and then a couple of years after that, Iraq was invaded.
Immediate upscale against Palestine.
And this War on Terror is going to go on for 50 years or 100 years.
They floated the name the Long
War.
They said
100 years war. Exactly wanted a new Cold War.
How can you not look at the way this War on Terror has started? What was the trigger event of the War on Terror? We have to do that. To blank that out as though it's of no relevance,
this is just whistling in the wind. I mean, 2 points. I'll ask George Monbiot first. I mean, George Monbiot, he's had a lot of go at the 9/11 truth movement and what have you. If you go back up to the Guardian website, I think it was in October 2001, month after it happened, he actually wrote an article about the inconsistencies in the official narrative. During that space of time, there haven't been less and less inconsistencies. They've only grown. And he suddenly turned about face, so don't really know where he's coming from. Noam Chomsky here says, crimes are far more serious than blowing up the World Trade Center would be. Now, I don't know any other crimes that have started wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, being accountable for probably the genocide of almost 1 million people. So this bloke's supposed to be a left-wing, progressive person, and 1 million people have died, and he's...
Well, he would... in his defence, I mean, Noam's not with us, sadly.
No.
But
I wish they would come out.
He would say that the real crimes are the crimes actually in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. What preceded those crimes and what gave the US military government justification to go and commit those crimes was 9/11. And as well, I mean, you've got to look at... Go and Google post 9/11. Put post 9/11 to Google, or we live in a post 9/11 world.
The world has changed.
The world's changed after
9/11. To reassess the rules.
Go.
Trips off the tongue of every politician.
Put it into Hansard and see how many times it's been raised in British Parliament. How many times it's raised in the British press, and. Honestly, if you don't think 9/11 is important, then you obviously know.
And many issues flow from 9/11. That's the other thing that's important to flag up, is that while we work in this world view whereby what we're told by the mainstream media is more or less the true picture, and that the way to affect things is through democratic lobbying and the usual campaigning mechanisms and the usual messages, then life will go on as usual and they'll get on with their war games. But there are many, many other deceptions and lies around science, around life, around the nature of politics, around the way decisions are made, around the way the world is governed, that will flow from this. If people get their heads around 9/11 was an inside job, they will reassess, what is the mainstream media telling us? How do we hold power to account?
I mean, I would just interject to say one interesting thing which has happened with the 9/11 truth movement, quote unquote, or without quotes, if you like, is that the role of the internet has been even more powerful than it is in other campaigns. For example, the movie Loose Change has been downloaded so many times that it's possible to say that it's had a palpable effect on things.
I'd like to bring that and connect it to what we were saying before about when people say, why aren't we focusing on these other issues? Simple reason is as Ian and I both said, a lot of people in the room do care about those issues. But those issues you can get information about through the media. And I think that's a really important point with me with 9/11 Truth is that I was a person that watched the news every day, read two newspapers, and yet I hadn't found out this information about 9/11. Mm. Okay, you can find out about Darfur, you can find out about various things happening all over the world in the mainstream media. That information is not made available to people on this one issue. Okay, so the reason that people get so passionate about this and get so into trying to get the message across, part of the reason, is that there's no other way other than us people of getting this information to people. The media won't cover it. You know,
you have to be the media.
You have to do that. You have to do that. Well done, sound possible. But you understand what I'm saying is that the internet, normal civilians, scientists who have the guts, military personnel who have the guts, are the sole voice on this. And the only way that voice is presented is through the internet. Okay, so with these other issues, these other left-wing issues, very important as well. I support the vast majority of them. But you can actually find out information about them through your newspaper by reading The Guardian, New Statesman and such, and those sort of publications. You're not going to find anything but vitriol, even from the publications which should be focusing on things like this, other than from the internet.
No.
I think it's important to look in a long historical perspective at the changes that have come about and at various stages in history and the advances in technology that have gone with them and made them possible. One was civilization itself, which seemed to begin with writing, with the fact that people could write. Another was the Renaissance, which came about at the time that the printing press and mass communication, or the beginnings of mass communication, could start. Now we're reaching yet another level, and we don't know what it's going to give birth to, but we have this internet, which is an incredible means of communication, and it is going to have a huge effect on society in the future, I believe. If the powers that be don't nobble it.
Yeah. that's my big paranoid fear.
Let's make the most of it, and let's realise that the future can be rosy, but we've got to use the new technology.
Yeah,
let's make it history.
That's a very
I did a blog along those lines.
Did you?
Basically saying it's our duty to be internet addicts. Do you know what I mean? There's this sort of sign of this sweaty palmed internet geek. Do you know what I mean? It's a very socially undesirable thing to be. Forget it. It's not just a good thing to do. It's our responsibility, because if it goes, you know what I mean, all that power we have right now goes with it. We have that power now, we have to use it. We can't assume it's infinite.
I disagree though. I think a lot of the time people spend too much time on the internet, where you're better off standing on the street than getting man on the street.
A qualification. The internet is a way we can coordinate those things. There's absolutely no worth in staying on the internet and posting all the time and watching videos all the time. The internet is a way we coordinate this and make this happen. That qualification needs to be put there, definitely.
So, returning to the streets there, last couple of questions as we're closing, and I'm sure they'll chuck us out soon, is I'm sure in campaigning on this issue and in trying to talk to people in the street about this, you must have had some interesting reactions. Do you want to tell us about any of this?
Well, I love street campaigning. I was a street fundraiser for years, and I really enjoyed it.
You were a chugger?
I was a chugger.
Oh,
in the early days of chuggers.
I wish you'd told me that before.
For the Americans, a chugger is a charity mugger. Somebody stands on the street for one of any charities and demands bank details for monthly installments for that particular charity.
Okay, and then that time wasted, let's move on. Basically, yeah, this is in the golden age when I was doing this, when people didn't hate us quite so much, and it was a really positive thing to do. But I just really enjoy talking to people on the street, so I always take a leaflet as an opportunity to stop people and talk to them. You'd be surprised how positive the reaction can be from a lot of people. But you get the odd person. When the person doesn't agree with 9/11, it's an almost unhealthy psychological response. They're angry. You can think this.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just, no,
really
I don't
angry.
Agree. Do you know what I mean? They'll get angry. And I'll go back to this anti-Trident protest that me and Blind and Andy went to leaflet. There was just a fellow who was just furious and dismissive and like venomful, do you know what I mean? And he would just repeat mantras over and over again, just repeat, planes hit the buildings, buildings set on fire, buildings fell down, that's all you need to know, planes hit the buildings set on fire. And I said, well, is it impossible? Let's just forget, you know, don't hear my rationale, but is it impossible that explosions could have brought the building down? He goes, yes. And you go, okay, so I couldn't take a building, fly a plane into it, and then set off explosives. That would be impossible. He said, yes. And that was the point, after half an hour, trying to talk to him, I realised it's time to move away.
we should say for the audience, Stefan's a bit slow on the uptake. Most of us have got that one up.
I won't give up.
But Linda, you're a legendary leafletter. What's happened to you?
Well, I'm quite interested in the way this whole thing's evolved over 2 years, because I've been fairly intensively campaigning on the streets and talking to loads of people. You know, it's just gone a blur, the number of people I've talked to. But when I started out, you know, you would get these sort of curious, you know, suspicious, hostile, backing off sort of reactions from the public. But as time has gone on, you get more and more people saying, good on you, keep going, you know, keep plugging away. And this is quite an interesting development. Mm-hmm. And I particularly noticed it in the Lebanon march last summer when we, just after the hostilities against Lebanon started, and there was this huge march in early August that stopped the war, which was underreported, of course, you know, there were only just a few thousand people. But in fact, I'm sure there must have been at least 50,000 people on that march, and it was August the 5th, you know, peak holiday time.
60,000, according to
Euro
News.
And I went around with my placard, and I had no hostile reactions whatsoever. This was a real turning point. You know, I gave out loads of leaflets, and lots of people congratulated, and, you know, just gave me a nod and a wink or whatever. This is definitely something happening at the grassroots.
Well, I mean,
it's definitely turned. I mean, it's not just at the grassroots. I mean, look at in America as well now. I mean, what Dennis Kucinich, I think his name is.
Kucinich.
Yeah. He's actually standing as a Democrat presidential candidate. He was involved in that big presidential candidate debate with Obama and Clinton last week, and he's currently filing for Cheney to be impeached. And he got approached by some 9/11 activists last week or week before last, and he's actually said he runs the Domestic Policy Congressional Committee, which doesn't have the biggest funding, but he has said in front of the camera that he'll be investigating various parts of 9/11 with his committee, certain specific events of 9/11 with his committee.
I mean,
that's so mainstream now. It's gone beyond fringe. Any of that.
I think I'd like to flag up for the viewers the Patriots question.
There's no viewers here.
There's
no
viewers here.
Listen. Listen with mother. The 9/11, Patriots question 9/11.com site is an amazing site because it's taken in more and more of, starting with some establishment figures who came out, then bringing in the scientists and the scholars, and now it's the victims have come out, you know, the actual people who suffered from 9/11 have come out on that site. And now we're getting entertainers and comedians and God knows who all. But the site is actually snowballing in America. And anybody who's a little bit sort of doubtful as to where this is all going should go to that site and check it out.
Good you mentioned that, because our last question, if you want to get another comment in, that's fine, but our last question I think for tonight would be for you to plug your favorite book, movie, website, or whatever. If someone were listening to this and wanted to find out more about 9/11 truth and why it's such an important issue and what's wrong with the official conspiracy theory, or the official story, I should say. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've plugged mine.
Now's your turn to plug away.
Okay, first, I mean, if you're very new to 9/11 Truth, then I'd suggest you watch 9/11 Press for Truth. It's based on the Jersey girls who lost, four women who lost their husbands on 9/11. It's all about the setting up of the 9/11 Commission and everything like that, and it just shows you what a farce that was. And if you want to go, I mean, Loose Change is very good. There's few inaccuracies in it, but it shouldn't be discounted purely because of truth.
This is the legendary video on Google Video.
I mean, if you
don't have, there's a third edition coming out.
I mean, Charlie Sheen's narrating the third edition out in September. And then if you want to sort of go a bit further down, then you should look at, a lot of people plug 9/11 Mysteries for the Collapse of the Towers, but I actually think Improbable Collapse is a better film. I think it's done by Mike Berger of 9/11truth.org, which is a good site. Websites, if you want to keep up with mainstream events in 9/11, 9/11blogger.com keeps you up to date with everything happening in the community. And if you want to research, I think you should go to Jim Hoffman's site. I can't remember the exact location of it.
WTC7.
It's like 911WT7.net or something like that. But type in Jim Hoffman, WT7.net, and then there's Copter of Research, which is Paul Thompson's timeline.
Yeah, I think you've nicked all of them now.
Sorry.
No?
I've got one which I think is much neglected, and I think it's a very good summary for people. It's called 250 plus smoking guns. It actually lists 270 smoking guns at the moment, but it's growing all the time.
Maybe it'll be called 300 too.
Yeah, and it takes quotations from the printed media, and I think some from the broadcast media. And for every smoking gun, it tells you where you can look up this evidence in the mainstream media. It makes a cast iron case for 9/11 being a put-up job based on evidence in the mainstream media. Nobody can argue with that.
Go ahead, Ian.
Well, I mean, the other advice I would have is, beyond all those 9/11 resources, is just to look at the wider issues, and you don't have to look far joining up the dots from 9/11 sites to other so-called conspiracy theory sites to look at the bigger picture in terms of raising awareness around what, you know, the US global military engine, basically, and how that works and how it has worked for many, many years, and to reassess, you know, politics in this country has become sterile. It's become arguments about the NHS and the education system.
About £8 billion worth of funding.
Yeah, that's how it's presented to us. But the real challenges we face today are around the issues raised around truth and accountability by the truth movement, global justice in terms of ending world poverty, and facing up to the environmental crisis that we face. And we need to join up those dots and take back the power that we've given to these psychopaths. People need to wise up pretty quick, basically.
I mean, I'd also suggest actors go and look at all the debunking sites. Go to 9/11 Myths. Go to...
After doing all of those sites, you even robbed my next point.
go to Screw Loose Change. Look at all those facts. Because all those facts, there's no point in campaigning on them. If they can be debunked, don't campaign on them. Then
that's exactly
they
what
they don't actually...
Say, yeah.
Cover at the main points that we go to, but the thing is, a lot too many people do campaign a lot of the points that are debunked. People hear this information from the campaigners, then go to 9/11 Myths and go, oh, well, it's all a load of nonsense. So,
yeah.
Really educate yourselves. Really, really don't go campaigning until you've done 6 months research on what is cast iron solid evidence.
That's it. Do not. Don't even. I didn't say out loud I thought 9/11 was an inside job until I read every single debunking site I could find alongside every single conspiracy theory site. Again, I'm doing this little thing.
Don't discount common sense, because a lot of what happened on 9/11, if you look at it with your own intuition, your human faculties that everybody has, is common sense
All of it's on video. Have a look at the videos, read the bunking sites, read alternative theories, decide for yourself what matches up best. There is no point whatsoever deciding to get into any kind of 9/11 activism until you've read through every single debunking site there is. It will not only help you discard the wheat from the chaff, it will also allow you to form your arguments. If you do a debate, the first thing you do, or the first thing you should do if you're interested in debating, is think about it from the other person's argument. You think, how am I going to debunk this? Get the arguments, build your arguments against them. Mm-hmm. Going back to original question, films, books, etc. Films, I really like, a lot of them have mentioned, I really like Old Smoke and Mirrors, which is one that you can find on YouTube or Google Video. It doesn't go into a lot of the science, but it goes into the motive, discusses peak oil, it has a lot of very reliable voices on it.
We don't all buy peak oil, actually.
We don't all buy peak oil, but I think we can agree that oil energy resources in the Middle East is very much something to do with the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Can we agree? Yeah. Okay, so whether or not we agree with peak oil, we can look at how implausible the idea that America would do nothing. Do you know what I mean? That's basically what Old Smoke and Mirrors presents, is the fact that we've got a very pivotal century right now, and where energy resources are possibly running out, possibly not running out.
But they're still crucial, regardless.
Energy resources are crucial. The Central Asia and the Middle East are a crucial strategic ground. We have a growing power in China that's developing allegiances with Russia and other powerful countries. America, without the Cold War, had no more motive for intervention in other countries, or no sort of motive. Are we expected to believe they'd sit and wait and hope for 9/11 to happen? No, lucky when it did. It brings up questions like that, which I think are worth looking at.
I do wonder about that. Where was all this Islamic terrorism before the whole...
It all seems one more documentary I'll plug in. We go into that question. Yeah. It's not a documentary, it's a presentation by Kevin Ryan called A New Standard for Deception. And alongside that...
A New Standard for Deception,
Kevin Ryan, if you put into Google. Alongside that, Journal for 9/11 Studies, and there's a lot of good papers, and that's really taking apart the official reports. And that's what made me...
Anything we can read on the tube?
Yeah, I mean, obviously David Ray Griffin has probably got to be the best, most scholarly writer on the subject.
Summary of it, yeah.
He's written three books, and I just had to release a fourth. First book, New Pearl Harbor. The second book was 9/11 Commission Report on Missions and Distortions. Third book was What Christian Faith and the Truth by 9/11. And his new book, which is out in the next month or two, is called Debunking the 9/11 Debunkers, which is basically a riposte to the likes of Popular Mechanics and anyone else who's tried to debunk or falsely debunk the 9/11 main truth arguments, really, and put in a really non-speculative, scientific manner.
One final one on the... Because you flagged up... in terms of understanding Islamic terrorism and so forth. Again, to give a plug to the BBC, Power of Nightmares, although they Adam Curtis came out in favour of the official version of 9/11, the rest of the story that he tells in terms of the connections between the CIA, Western intelligence services, and Islamic fundamentalism is eye-opening, to say the least, in terms of understanding how these two opposites that are presented to us actually join up round the back.
Yeah, I mean, anything by Adam Curtis, you've got The Trap, you've got Century of the Self, The Power of Nightmares, and the Mayfair set, I think, is the other one. All very well worth watching.
Oh, really, yeah, the internet's your playground.
Internet's playground. Type 9/11 into Google.
And
have fun.
See what comes
out. Well, I can't do no more than thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. Noel, Stefan, Ian, Andy, and Belinda from the 9/11 Truth Movement. I noticed none of you plugged 911.co.uk, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. And, that's for another program.
Big shout out
for next week.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Michael.